Welcome to the Logic Consortium. Today we're speaking with rocket scientist and prolific scholar, Dr. Sergei Khrushchev, son of former Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev, about markets and planned economies. We're going to be asking him about his father's views of capitalism and whether they were incompatible with the Soviet system. So thanks so much to Dr. Khrushchev for joining us, and please stick around.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. I figured I'd jump right into it.
Yes, let's jump up.
Perfect. As I mentioned, I wanted to talk about planned and market economies in kind of broad strokes.
Yeah.
In this book that I spoke about, there is this fictional allegory where your father, on his visit to the United States in 1959, is commenting on a hamburger kiosk that he sees and says, if the capitalist who owns the kiosk could not make a profit at the price of 15 cents, he wouldn't be doing it. And that is the secret of everything we see here. This story captures what the author saw as an inherent limitation of the Soviet system, namely that central planning made it a lot harder to know whether it was advantageous to produce a certain good. And you mention in your writings about the problems that your father faced when thinking about reforms to the system, that he feverishly searched for a way to get the economic machine to function in response to something other than shouts from above. But there was opposition to talk about markets, competition, and profit, all of which had been condemned. Can you talk about all of this a little bit and whether or not your dad did see market and planned economies as compatible and the role he saw for markets?
When we talk about the market and the planned economy, and we're not using this as a slogan, as a propaganda, so we can say, which system can be more effective? And from the primitive view of the beginning of the 20th century, they thought if it will be everything in one office, plant, production, and distribution, it can be more effective than market. They don't know what can be produced in all the country and how it is to sell to the people or distribute to the people. But then when it started to implementing this, it appeared that it is much more complicated. So my father, he tried to find out how you make the planning economy effective. And when you're talking about the planning economy effective, first of all, what he saw, that if you have the centralized system, that planning and command everything from one point. It was his beginning of the critique that if you need the belt from the conveyor, in many cases you order producing this belt to the conveyor in the Far East and delivering this in your ministry to the west of the country, even if there's another factory that's producing these belts just behind the fence in the same place, but it's belong to the different ministry. So he tried to destroy and remove all these barriers, first starting to build the regional economical councils, and it was a reform in 1957. But then it appeared that it is also not effective, because before it was ministries that built these fences along their lines, and now the regions build their fences along their lines. So in 1962, he began preparation to the new reform, where he told that we have to give first all the right to make the decision to the directors of the enterprise and directors of the collective farms. And we have to reduce their relations with the state only with the sharing part of their revenue paying to the state that can be translated of the paying taxes. And in 1962, it was the experiment where it was the 48 factories, different factories from the building closest, make closest to the big metallurgic combines in three government state farm. They worked on this on these rules, and it was very it was surprise effect. The state farm that was freed from the all this control from the top, increased the productivity for about five times, and they reduced their workforce for the three times, and salaries of their workers became about 600 rubles per month. That was close to the salary of the ministers. And these plans were of these reforms was planned on 64-65. That people who prepared these reforms, so-called the Black Hundred of the Young Economists, they sent this proposal to Khrushchev at the beginning of the October. But when they reached his office, he was not in the office, and Kosygin replaced him. And he used part of his proposals in his so-called Kosygin reforms. So it was many of the things, including profit, because the profit was the parameter that you can find the effectiveness of the working of the enterprise. And before, it was many parameters that you cannot really understand how it's working. And my father generated discussion where you have used one of these parameters, and one of them was profit. And it was the letter that the provincial economist Evsey Liberman sent to my father, and he gave order to publish in the newspaper Pravda. And after that, the beginning of this discussion about how you will make your work effective. And in many of these discussion in the top leadership now from the munition there, my father usually very often used the example of the Western world, you know, including Americans, what you told about hamburger. You told if capitalists will not have profit, they will not do it. So why we can do something different? We have to find out how we can work as effectively as they are. And then it was, of course, question how you can reform the Soviet society. It was not very easy because many prices were fixed prices, and you cannot change prices, for example, for the loaf of bread. Even if to make the agriculture effectively, you have to increase prices of the on which you are buying the grain.
Yes, and as you're mentioning, it's not about slogans. It's about which can be more effective. And you kind of just have given example about when you generate discussion about profit, as you mentioned with the farms, there can be more production. Is there an area where you see the central planning can be more effective? I mean, with the, as I've heard you mention, the Soviet system was the first passenger jet plane, the first nuclear power station, Sputnik. Is that a result of the central planning or just so much money being dedicated to it?
The central planning is effective when you have one of your goals. For example, you want to build the heavy industry and investing everything there, or you want to win the war, or do something else. If you look in the American industry during the Second World War, it also was planning there. if you will look in the beginning of the moon race and the Americans build the planning system how you will produce the Apollo and Saturn V. But when you are moving to the old economy, which is very complicated, where you have millions and millions of items, the Saturn planning became absolutely inefficient because, first of all, you have the bottleneck problem. You cannot resolve all the problem in one office on one head. You have too high price of mistake because it is one. It is all the state economy. It is like one enterprise, and individuals can make mistake. In the decentralized economy, you're risking the future of the one enterprise. Here, you're risking the future of the country. And also, the centralized economy is naturally monopolized economy. In the monopolies, you're not interested in innovation because you can sell everything what you produce and why you invest in innovation. So this was that problem that my father faced, and he understood first of this why he started this reform in 1962-64. By the way, it was very similar what Deng Xiaoping did in China 20 years later.
So he saw the limitations of the central planning and the potential benefits of market competition and profit.
You know, we cannot use this word so primitive because I don't think that he would use the question of the capitalism economy. But he told that we have to reduce the planning to the some very important and few figures. For example, that we have to produce shoes on the so many factories. And then all these directors of factories will decide how many shoes they will produce, what will be the fashion of them, what will be materials, which will be, and other things. And of course, when you are starting this transformation and you giving the permission to the director to make all these decisions, through the economical logic, inevitably you bringing this economy to privatization because you cannot permit your director to risk and manage your money or state money because he has different goals and different interests than the state. And to bring them together in the just logical relations, you have to say you have to risk your own money and then only to pay taxes to the state. That means that you will go to the market economy. But it was beyond Khrushchev time. As historian, I don't want to say that Khrushchev or my father understood what I understand now. He had the strong feeling before everybody else in the world that we have decentralized economy. And then we can go only talking about possible logic of this development.
Just generally, I'm very interested in the idea that the terms free market and socialism are still used as pejoratives and derogatory comments in the U.S., depending on what circles you are talking about, when the reality is that mostly everyone is for a mixed system, like we've kind of been describing, with a role of markets and a role for the state.
No, of course, because we're living in a very different system than it was at the time of the Adam Smith, where it was really free market. It is no free market now because we have many regulations. It's natural. And when we talk about socialism, we have to understand that socialism doesn't mean the state economy. It doesn't mean centralized economy. Socialism, that mostly means welfare state. How much of the budget money you want to protect your own people. For example, we're using the budget money for the defense budget. It's part of the socialism we're using them for the police because we want to protect people, or we will use it for the welfare that can be there. We're using this for the pension. We're using this for some other states. It was on the one level in the United States. It is in the very different level in Norway and Sweden, because that people decided there that they wanted to use more their funding to support the majority of the population, and that means that you will pay bigger taxes, because if you have bigger protection of the people, that means that you have to just collect more money to the budget. And here's all this discussion in our economy. More freedom or less freedom, how much you can spend for the protection of the people through the budget, or people have to think about themselves. It is a very complicated question because, for example, some people making their savings during their life because they think that inevitably they will be old and sick, and they didn't need pension. But the majority of the people don't think about this, and somebody have to think about this and press them and tell you have to pay to the Social Security because later you will be live under the Brooklyn Bridge. And then when you will we will tax you this money, then you will pay you back when you become older than 65 or 67.
You're listening to the Logic Consortium on Chicago Sound Alliance 88.7 WLUW. Sorry for that technical difficulty, Dr. Khrushchev. Moving along on a similar note, there still is this association of capitalism and free markets as kind of heartless toward the masses.
But you cannot say free market or heartless, because free market, it is some ideal system that not exist. It not exist in the world. The free market that we saw in the 18th century brought the world to this severe crisis, one after another, to several revolutions. And through the reforming the economical system, making more efficient, we did it different. So now it is no free market, the same as it is no fully centralized system. We still have some planning in the different aspects of the economy in all the countries, but we have also regulation. But you cannot go to the extreme. The problem of our discussion that we making this theoretically extreme system, the poor system, poor centralized system or poor free system, and then not understanding how it looks like we just applied to the our contemporary world. It is no free market in Europe. It is no free market in United States. It is no free market in China. It is no centralized economy anywhere in the world. And even in the Soviet time, it was different aspects of the competition, different aspects of the complicated relations between producers and consumers.
And kind of finishing up, you just mentioned the healthcare debate in the United States. And I see... In your book, you talked about a criticism of central planning is that there's bureaucratic interference in the production process at all levels, and that the party leaders had to analyze the most trivial details. Can you talk about the healthcare debate in the United States a little bit?
Healthcare debates in the United States, it is not about the... socialism or not about the centralized system. You cannot just copy the fully centralized system in healthcare. Healthcare, it is about the who will manage this very big money. It can be some people who will be nominated by the state officials, and they will be the bureaucrats, or it is the very bureaucratic insurance system. And we know that the spending in the insurance system is in the United States is much bigger than, for example, in the state healthcare system in Taiwan or Japan. And we know that in the United States, we're spending for the healthcare 18% of our GDP, and Taiwan spending 7% of GDP. And the biggest spender in this state healthcare system, France, spending the 11% of the GDP for this. So this shows that our system is not efficient, because we cannot say that our system is the best. We have a very good doctors, but still we have too expensive drugs. We have many tests that really you mustn't use, because it is motivated by this healthcare system. So it has to be reformed. And we have only one system in the capitalist world. It is the so-called the centralized healthcare system that have not planning each drug, not planning each step of the doctor, but they created different relations between the state that giving funding, hospitals, doctors, and the pharmaceutical industry. And we have example. I will, if you will ask me, I will not send you to the Soviet Union. I will send you to Japan and Taiwan. I think that they have the best system there. By the way, they have no lines. We have here a private system, but if you want to go to the doctor, you will sit in line. They have no lines.
So 50 years after your father's 1962 reforms, we're still looking for the proper balance of state role and private role.
I will answer you, it is endless system, because you are adjusting all the time to the new environment, what changes. It is the same in banking system, in the healthcare system, everywhere. Because to be more effective, to be more inventive, you need to have the initiative of the people that sometimes motivated by the greediness, and sometimes these people are not very honest. But they're trying to do something. And then you try to find out, to put the regulation where you close these gaps, where you're doing this in the wrong way, like the derivatives was before, and trying to put them in the normal channel of this production. I think it will never end it, because it will only end it with the end of all the activity.
You're listening to The Logic Consortium, and that was our interview with Dr. Sergei Khrushchev. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much to Dr. Khrushchev for joining us. Have a great day.